The DL Debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love with outdoor dining. Book now and enjoy the Sarah's experience.
Welcome one and all to the DL Debate. Thanks so much for listening in, whether it's now on Highland Radio or back via podcast on highlandradio.com, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get it. Listen, just before I start the show, I met Lee Gooch here earlier. I just want to put a shout out to Lee and the fantastic Noah's Bird Push. Really caught the imagination of everybody in the Northwest here. Some fantastic charities, kids' charities supported. Listen, fair play to anybody who put in a donation. If you haven't done it yet, you can go on to Noah's Bed Push on a GoFundMe page, or search Lee Gooch on Instagram, on Twitter or Facebook, and you'll see a link to the site, and get on and donate. Fantastic work by Lee. Fair play to all involved. Now, just switching our attention to the show this evening, we've got some great guests as ever. Later on the show, we're going to hear from Glenn Colin-Kill, native and chief sports writer of the Star, Kieran Cunningham, to discuss the All-Ireland series, Tyrone's poker play, a wee bit about the hurling and the fall, potentially, of the Dubs. Be interesting to get his point of view on that. We're going to hear from ladies boss Maxi Kern after their narrow one-point defeat to Armagh in the Ulster final at the weekend. But first of all, we turn our attention to the local scene here and to a man who knows a thing or two about it. It's Donegal News reporter, the Milford Maverick himself, Ryan Ferry. Ryan, how are you this evening?
I'm not too bad, Brendan, yourself?
Tearing away, my man, tearing away. Ryan, did I hear you were in transit yesterday on the way back and you were going to watch the second half of the hurling? Is that correct?
I was making my way back up from lovely Dingle. I was down for a wee weekend away, and the plan was to stop and watch the second half of the hurling, but I think the contest was long over at that stage. You know, we were travelling through Abbeville and Adair and places like that, so I'm sure there were plenty of happy people about there yesterday evening.
Yes, you could have hung about for the celebrations. Well, listen, I think with some of the debate I heard with Pat Kenny this morning, giving off about people in Croke Park, I think there'll be a big spotlight in any celebrations. They'll have to be reined in a bit, Ryan. Yeah, normally we look at the second half for all the action. The first half, the first maybe 10 or 15 minutes is when the action was, unfortunately, for the poor Cork lads.
Yeah, and was, and unfortunately, I think for maybe a lot of teams, I was listening to John Milan on the radio back up, and I think the age profile of this Limerick team is quite good. A lot of boys in their mid-20s, so, you know, they mightn't just be going away too far anytime soon.
Yeah, average age 25, that is correct, Ryan. Yeah, a bit frightening for everybody. They could have done four in a row very, very easily, Ryan, but as they've won three out of four, and well, remains to be seen what's next. But, Ryan, listen, just jumping in there, everybody wants to know what's happening with this county final, and will it be rearranged? I hear it's with the CCC, Ryan, there to meet the clubs, and from that we will get an outcome to what do you think is going to happen next?
Yeah, I think probably the same way it's looking out, Brendan, is if anybody's looking for a quick resolution to this, it doesn't look like we're going to get it. We're being told that the Donegal CCC are to meet with both clubs. But unfortunately, the minute the Kilcare club have suspended their club activities until further notice, so the CCC haven't been able to meet the Kilcare club yet. And so the way they've worded it is until further notice, so we don't know when they will be back up in operation. Obviously, hopefully, it is as soon as possible. But so we'll have to wait and come and see what comes out of that. I think from what I gather, the CCC have said that the Kilcare objection is valid, but they obviously have to go and prove that now, and you know they have to speak to the Neve Connell club as well. So, yeah, I think people were hoping that maybe this could have been dealt with very quickly, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen, Brendan.
And Ryan, when you think it isn't going to happen, Ryan, do you think that's down to the COVID outbreak in Kilcare, or do you think that it's just going to be a process that'll take a bit of time, or is it that Neve Connell can maybe delay it a bit? Where do you see the delay coming from mostly?
Well, I suppose, like I, as such, I don't really know, but I know that the 2021 Donegal Senior Championship is going to start on the weekend of the September 11th and 12th. And, you know, at the minute, it's very hard to see how we can have the 2021 concluded before that. So, you know, there's going to be games coming pretty much every weekend then as such. So I suppose that's what I'm talking about. If there is a case where, you know, something, a match has to be replayed, and that mightn't necessarily be the way this plays out, but yeah, it's from what I gather, you know, it's not going to be sorted in the immediate future anyway. You know,
yeah. Ryan, do you think we could possibly have the crazy situation that it could be played again after this year's championship? Do you think that's a possibility?
Well, I don't think you could rule anything out at the minute. You know, like, you know, what we're told is, you know, if this is proven, it could be a fine, a title awarded, or a match replayed. So, you know, like, I would definitely say at the minute, you'd probably say if it's proven, that it would be a strong possibility that we would have a match replayed. And, you know, that would be, you know, it's a bizarre conclusion to a bizarre 2020 championship, you know, and of all championships that maybe people were hoping that this one would, the final would just have gone through without any hiccups, but that's just not the way it's been. So, you know, I would say at the minute, you know, it is still a possibility that the game could be replayed.
Yeah. Do you know, Ryan, the more this goes on, I mean, this going back to its original outbreak, which could have been prevented, that delayed the championship from kind of spiralled out of the county team, you know. You just think, God, I'll not say a mess. Listen, we're living in unprecedented times, but the way it was finished and played in that, you thought that was God. It was almost at least it's put to bed now, and now it's going to rumble on. So, listen, that remains to be seen, Ryan, and we'll park that for now and see what comes back from the CCC as they meet the clubs. Ryan, just looking across the weekend's action here, I love to see teams, you know, we talked last week about the Shams, Ballyshannon, come back to the top table in League One, you know, one of the former powers. And I remember from the early days doing battle with another team that was on the round, they're up off the radar big time, was Four Masters, surprisingly. But they've just won back-to-back minor leagues there. Is there signs there of a new wave of Four Masters men coming to lead the charge?
Oh, there definitely is. And I would say that this minor team is probably the start of it. And, you know, from what I gather, there's more coming. And I think last week in the under-13 Southern Board, the league, the Four Masters won the Division 1. And there's second team, which is pretty much an under-12 team, won the Southern Board Division 2 under-13 title. So there's huge work going on at underage level in Four Masters. They've really, really got their house in order, and there's some terrific players coming through. I think I was at an under-13 final a couple of years ago when they played Clonakilty, and they were really, really impressive. Some lovely, silky, skillful forwards, you know. So, you know, I was chatting to their manager, the minor manager, John Sinclair, before the game last week, and, you know, he was talking about the challenges, you know, of keeping young players involved. And, you know, even from last year when they were playing games, you know, there was a drop-off already, you know, and that always happens when players reach minor grade. But, you know, for the likes of Four Masters and Arua and the likes of Terriman who are coming through with, you know, big underage teams, it's going to be about keeping these players about, making sure there's jobs for them, making sure that they, you know, there'll always be a certain amount that will go travelling or head up to Dublin, or, you know, the work will take over. But, you know, they just need to make sure that they can keep as many as they can about and make sure that the right structures are there for them to bring through. But, you know, Four Masters at the minute, you know, they've managed to hold on to their senior championship status over the last couple of years, but they've dropped down to Division 3, you know, and they're not going to be promoted out of Division 3 yet, and I'm not actually sure they're even safe in Division 3 at the minute. So, you know, there's definitely talent coming through, but they probably just need to stabilise a wee bit at the top at the minute.
Yeah, listen, good to see us. We need a competitive teams. Pull through good players, pull through county players. You know, Four Masters would have always provided that over the years, and nobody better than the one and only Carol Lacey, of course. Ryan, just looking at the leagues there, very interesting story. Your buddy Frank Craig was on duty there out at the Glenswilly-Gador game. I've never heard of this in my life. You know, it was 11-9, got into the second half water break, and Robbie O'Donnell blows the whistle for the two teams to come out of their huddle. Now, I'm a bit surprised at that they didn't come straight out, Ryan, because the way I see it, the water break, now teams are coming out like boom, boom, they're in and out. So he blows it again, and Glenswilly come out of the air huddle, but Gador keep talking, and he waves play on from possession of Gador, Glenswilly, and they go up the pitch and put the ball in the net. Have you ever heard of this before in your life?
No, I haven't heard of it now, but it's funny, you know, I was at a couple of games last year. I think it was at a game in the Terriman and Four Masters, actually one of the very first games played last year, and St Michael's tried to do it to Terriman, and the referee pulled them back. you know. So if it's one of those, you were wondering, like, was it going to happen sooner rather than later? And I think yesterday was the first day in Donegal anyway. And, yeah, definitely a bizarre one. And I think there was, plenty of banter and crack about Glenn Swilly yesterday evening, as you might expect. And I would say that maybe helped it. Help the situation, or maybe didn't help the situation, whatever way you want to look at.
Robbie was in no mood for messing maybe yesterday. Do you know, I was just thinking, Ryan, would you do that in the championship game though, or was he just laying down the law? You know, if you did, that would be a big call in the championship game. Maybe it was Robbie just giving them a warning.
Yeah, possibly. And like, teams have, you know, they get 2 minutes, I think, you know, so if teams are going to take more than their 2 minutes, maybe they're going to be in a bit of bother with this. But I think they'll definitely, not just Guido, but there'll be a lot of clubs now will be thinking, you know, we need to maybe tidy this up a wee bit, like, and just make sure we're getting out. I actually think it's a wee bit surprising, even in all situations where the goalkeepers even go in for these water breaks and team talks and stuff, you know, because like, I would have felt they would be far better off being ready for to take their kick out and when the action gets back underway again. But that's not the way it seems to play out. But I suppose there's a lot of managers and coaches maybe think that they can get a few messages across. And obviously the Limerick hurlers and Paul Kinnerk and John Kiely seem to be very much leaders in that way. So maybe there is method to what they're thinking, you know.
Yeah. Just looking at the Glenn Swilly, there was a lot of, I suppose, warning signs. They were having a tough start to the league. There was no coincidence maybe that Michael Murphy was back. You know, Guido had a top side on as well. Hugh, that was quite a one for Glenn Swilly. I know that goal probably boosted him on, but they pulled away after that as well. So there might be a kick in the Glenn men yet.
Yeah, well, so it's always probably a bit of a difficult one when you're discussing Glenn Swilly and their league form. You know, traditionally they're not a team that take it hugely seriously, and you know, when they have Michael Murphy back in their team, they're a completely different side. Like, you know, and there was just a stronger feel to it. Interesting that Keelan McFadden was net for Glenn Swilly yesterday, which was a bit of a strange one. You know, I don't really know what the thinking was there, but it'd be interesting to see if that continues for the championship. But definitely a stronger feel to the Glenn Swilly team. And as you said, like, you know, Guidoor were, you know, fairly strong looking, you know. Again, interesting to see that Dahi Roberts was in net for them. I think Christopher Sweeney came on in the second half. It would be interesting. Is that the approach they're going to take with Dahi, who's the under-20 keeper this year? So, yeah, probably plenty of thinking for both teams. You know, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I don't think Guidoor are actually assured of their place in Division 1 next year. They could still end up in the playoffs, so I'm sure they were looking into that game yesterday thinking we could do with the victory, you know. So no, it's a bit of thinking for both sides coming out of that one too.
Yeah, it's hard to believe, as I say, just looking at that team sheet, the top side on, you're not far off a team that went all the way in Ulster a couple of years ago. Maybe Keelan McFadden's looking at the begging thing. Maybe Glenn Swilly are going to play a bit of a seven style, and that'll be the tactic coming into the championship, Ryan. What keepers have the ability to come out and play that spare man?
Yeah, you never know. Now, he was obviously a fine outfield player, so maybe he'd be fit for it. It'll be interesting to see what teams do with their goalkeepers. There's always going to be huge pressure on them, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody converts a goalkeeper. You know, as such, I see Sean Patton was back in and that's for some unions yesterday too, like, so, you know, they have a pretty good one there as well, like, so.
No, yeah, they had a real walkover against St Michael's. Never nice to see how hopefully St Michael's can pull it together for a bit of a kick in the championship. Ryan, just going to the championship, last question to you. You know, the COVID outbreak in Kilkerry, there's a couple of other ones around the county. Have you fear this season compared to last season that, you know, things just seem to go along as normal? I don't know, I get the feeling it was because a lot of people maybe weren't getting tested. There was bound to be some COVID out there, but it seems to be a bit different this year. We people are getting tested. It might be a difficult championship to bring to a close.
It definitely could be. Like, and even, you know, you're looking at, you know, I think it was Downing's this week have lost, you know, had to give away the points in two games. against Termin and against St Nolls. Like, you know, you wouldn't want that to be seen to be happening in the Championship. You know, and I was actually kind of querying there, you know, would it be possible even that there would be maybe a change to the structure of the Championship? Because, you know, you've 4 rounds to play in the group phase of the senior, and then, you know, the quarterfinals, semifinals and finals, and it's a lot. It is a lot, like, you know, and I know, I think we're out in the senior champions will be out in Ulster in mid-November, so, you know, there's a bit of time to it, but, you know, you would be worried. I think you would be concerned about it, and, you know, I think particularly maybe down in southwest Donegal, the minute it's particularly prevalent, and maybe wasn't particularly bad there at other stages, you know. So, yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a factor over the next couple of weeks, and there probably will be teams that won't be able to field in Championship games, and that might just be the unfortunate truth of it.
Yeah. Well, listen, Ryan, we'll remain to be seen what happens. Fingers crossed, and we can get this Championship on, and get, of course, last year's Championship done as well. That's all to be sorted yet. Ryan, listen, thanks as ever for joining us this evening. Yes, great catching up with Ryan Ferry there. Now we turn our attention to Friday's Ulster final between our ladies and our man. I'm joined by their boss, Maxi Kern. Maxi, how are you this evening?
Yeah, so.
Yeah. Maxi, sorry, yeah, you always introduce people, and as soon as you do it, then you're like, right, you just lost an Ulster final, Maxi. And listen, 1-point game. Maxi, we very much had a bit of an Indian sign over Armagh this last while, but they finally got one over us on Friday.
Yeah, look, those things don't tend to last forever, you know, and they had a good run for 4 or 5 years there over Armagh, but, you know, there was a lot of the games were nip and tuck, and, you know, we knew they were quality out for getting an All-Ireland semi-final last year. But look, in saying that, we, you know, the game was there for us and was there for the taking, and, you know, we had an awful bad habit this year of giving teams a real head start against us, you know, in the semi-final against Cavan. You know, we were 1-5 to a point down after 10 or 15 minutes against Cork in the league semi-final, same thing. You know, we give them a 2-2 to a point head start, and, you know, and we did the same at the weekend there. We give them, you know, we were 9 points down at a stage and left ourselves on the mountain to climb, and, you know, in those conditions, you needed, you know, things to go your way. That didn't get the breaks. We probably didn't get the breaks. Haven't worked really hard to get back into the game and get level. You know, We just struggled to get those other couple of scores
to get us over the line. Yeah, Mason, listen, we've been, you know, the best side, and your team has been by far the best side in Ulster the last number of years. We didn't play in the competition last year. How did that come about?
Just that there was a late in there, but it was a COVID issue. You know, there was only 3 teams played in it, the way things panned out. You know, we were keen for the competition we played early in the year when there was a bit of a focus, you know, and there was a bit of a lead up to the All-Ireland series, and then the Ulster thing was pushed back to the end of the year. It was clashing with the Ulster club competition, and we just didn't see how we would be in a position to play. We weren't allowed to train in the lead up to the competition, whereas Armagh were, because they were in the latter stages of the All-Ireland series. So legally we were told, look, you're playing on the 6th of December. You know, we were sitting in November, start of November, and they told us, look, you're not allowed to train. That's just the way it is, because the government restrictions at that time only, or exemption only applied to teams that are in the All-Ireland series. So Armagh were able to train because they're in the All-Ireland semi-final, whereas the other teams weren't. So, you know, we just felt, all things considered, and the way the COVID thing was going at the time, that, you know, it just wasn't practical for us to take part. You know, we have so many girls out of the county, and they were being expected to travel, you know, back at weekends and in the middle of winter. So, you know, it just wasn't, we just felt it wasn't the right thing to do, you know, for all things considered.
Yeah, and of course, Maxi, people are listening in. The actual All-Ireland series is separate from the provincial, so they are played after. Do you like it that way, Maxi? Would you rather it's the
No, we're not. And look, we actually asked them, we begged them to try and play the Ulster Championship in the lead up to the All-Ireland this year as well, and there was opportunity to get it finished. They played the semi-final, all right, but for some reason they weren't keen on playing the final. Now, in saying that, it was a lovely spectacle on Saturday, and was, you know, it was a good occasion to be part of it. It was a really tense and tight game, and, you know, had we got over the line, it would have been a brilliant way to end the year, but and I'm sure that's the way Armagh feel about it now. It's a great end to their season. So that in itself is one issue. But look, I just feel that, you know, your progress through the All-Ireland series, they have a system where they seed the previous year's All Ireland semi-finalists, which I think is madness. You know, you're keeping the strong team stronger all the time, and you know there's no reward for being champions of your province. So we feel that that should be the way. You know, if you're victorious in your province, that you should be the seeded team on the back of that. And look, that hasn't been the case the last couple of years, so maybe they might change it again, and I would really hope that they do.
And a good story, I suppose, coming out of the Meath camp, when you're on about, you know, the, I suppose, coming up from intermediate and going all the way to a senior final, then Maxie, great work there. Good to see that can be done as well, and gives hope for a lot of teams around the country.
It does. Look, Meath have been coming for a bit, they've Lady Luck's been on their side as well. You know, that a lovely draw getting through. You know, the only Division 1 team they played has been Cork. You know, they played them twice, and that allowed them to build a bit of momentum. You know, we went under the Lions then, playing Galway and Kerry, and then straight into Dublin. So, we had no settling in period at all. You need that wee bit of luck for your season to plan out in a certain way, and you know, get your timeline right. And you know, I think Meath have just had a lovely trajectory, and they've been on an upward curve the whole way through, and you know they've played with no fear of anybody, and you know they've stuck true to their own way of playing, and they're going to put it up to Dublin as well. But look, as you say, it's encouragement for everybody else, you know, that you can rise up through the levels pretty quickly, you know, with the right kind of a setup in place and the right kind of investment in your team and a group of girls that buy into what you're doing. So, ladies football on the whole is on a rising tide, and, I think it's only going to get better.
Yeah, listen, I think some fantastic games, fantastic stuff being played out there. Max, just returning to the championship there, the Dublin game, you know, the previous year, obviously the freak goal and what might have been, it was 2-12 to 2-7. Listen, I know, Dublin, I mean, who can beat Dublin at the minute? You know, they're powering it up much like the men did. But is your feeling, Maxie, that there could be a victory coming from us? Are Donegal getting closer to them? Or was it just one of those games where Dublin had that bit of extra on us?
No, look, I do believe we're getting closer, and for whatever reason, we seem to be the one team that causes Dublin most bother over the last couple of years, whether it's the style of player we have. Even this year, you know, we would feel, you know, quite aggrieved the way the game panned out, and, you know, there was a couple of big refereeing decisions that went against us, and, you know, the ball ended up on the net on the other side of the field on both occasions. And that's not blaming bad luck or anything like that, or looking for a scapegoat. You know, Carla Rowe was player of the match. She scored 2-6. The only game she's played this year, she's been injured for every other game. She didn't play in the semi-final. So had we beaten Galway in our group match, we would have topped the group and would have met Dublin in the semi-final. You know, and it could have been a very different occasion. And, you know, and we lost a couple of players as well. We don't have a big squad, but we lost our two cornerbacks in the lead-up to Dublin game, you know, who are integral to our kick-out strategy, apart from anything else. And, you know, them not being there defensively was a big blow, but, you know, also the kick-out situation, and we struggled on our own kick-out both in the Dublin game and at the weekend there, and they were big factors in us losing both games, I feel. So, we haven't had the rub of the green, I don't think, and, you know, and that's not something you should be pointing at in terms of why you win or lose a game, or why you don't win a competition or you don't progress. But, look, it is a massive part of football, and Meath went and played Cork the last day. They were missing Orla Finn, who was player of the match against us, scored 1-7. Kira Sullivan at 2-3 against us in the Eastern Final. She comes off after 10 minutes with an AC injury. You know, so that's 3-10 of the whatever they scored against us in the semi-final. Take out their two best forwards. You know, those are the wee things that, you know, people don't really look at, I think. Just the role that luck plays in football, and that's not taking anything away from me. They still had to go and win the game, and they'd come from 7 points down, you know, with a few minutes to go. But it does a big help when opposition's two best players are not on the field, and that's what has been the case for our teams throughout the year. And, you know, we went to play Galway, and they had players back that hadn't played at any stage in the year in the lead up to that, and we just didn't seem to have that wee slice of luck, you know.
Yeah. Well, listen, Maxie, what about yourself for next season? Have you made any plans yet?
No plans, brother. No plans. Yeah. Sun's high in the sky here, so we need to enjoy the next couple
sure
of weeks.
Sure, listen. No, I did.
Take a blast and see where it takes us.
Listen, Maxie, as I said to Donal Cavan earlier, we're lucky to have you in terms of ladies football. There's no one comes near the experience and ability you have. So I'm hoping you stay on. Anyway, Maxie, you just turn your attention now to Gidore. You're coaching down there for the up-and-coming championship.
Yeah, look, a very exciting project. You know, I haven't done along with Kevin Cassidy and Joe Duffy there and his joint managers, and I haven't done through a bit of training with them. So, look, it's looking good for it's getting exciting now. The championship around the corner, and look, we just hope that the COVID situation doesn't have too much of an adverse effect on it. You know, it's interesting being on the other side of the fence. You know, we haven't been on the inter-county side of the fence for a long time. It's nice to get a viewpoint from the club side of it. And it's a very difficult job for clubs who have county players. You know, you don't see them for a large chunk of the year, and you know, you're hanging your hat on them coming back, and you know, and then there's a big job of trying to integrate them back into the setup, and you know, and that's a challenge for us. And you know, it hasn't gone particularly brilliantly for us since they've come back. So look, you're just trying to, you know, Find your feet now before the championship kicks in. But look, it's very exciting. You know, great bunch of lads, and a very proud club with a great tradition. So I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, some serious talent down there, Mick. You just watch them team talks at the water break from here on in, all right?
Well, indeed, Brendan. Well,
Maxie, listen, I'm heading for Downings after this. Say, you never know if you're down about. Hey, I'll catch up with you. I think I might owe you a jar for all this training and work you're doing. Then we'll shoot the breeze. I'll drop you a message, Maxie. Listen, thanks for joining us as ever. And
right, Brendan.
See what happens the rest of the season. Thanks, boss.
Good man. Bye.
Yeah, that is the one and only Maxie Kern. And now, as I say, from the start of the show, we turn our attention to my man Cunningham. Kieran Cunningham joins me, Chief Sports Writer of the Star, to we go through what's happening on the national stage. Kieran, how are you this evening?
Yeah, great form, Brendan. Yourself?
Oh, tearing away, Kieran. Mighty form. I took it easy at the weekend. I was the designated driver there at a birthday party yesterday, and when I woke up this morning, I was a happy man for it, let me tell you.
You're too old to be going out anyway. Those days are long.
You think we get sense, hey? We do. I'll tell you what, the hangovers, they make you get sense, let me tell you.
Yeah,
they get tough on the body. Listen, how's life in the Big Smoke? Of course, you're a Glencombe Kill man, living in Dublin this long time, Kieran. I was down for the Ulster final there. Things seemed a lot more normal in Dublin than they did in Letterkenny, let me tell you that.
Probably because of the scale of it, it would seem that way. It's relatively normal. Like, I'm of an age now, I don't be out that much, so. And I've actually been in Donegal a fair bit of the summer, you know, for family reasons, so.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that, but, you know, you just take on, like most of us, you just get on with it. Like, it hasn't been a great 18 months for anybody, but, you know, whining doesn't help, so you just have to get on with it and hope we get through this, you know, and.
Yeah,
and I hope we're all in good nick at the end of it.
Yeah, when you look at images around the world, Kieran, you think, yeah, right, what have I got to worry about? My God, there's some horrific stuff happening there. So listen, we'll get through this, all right, Kieran. Just a word yesterday on the green machine, just blown away by this Limerick team. Listen, three out of four, could have been four out of four. People are talking about one of the greatest sides ever. Is that too early, or are you thinking the signs is there that this Limerick team are just going to be unstoppable in the next few seasons?
Yeah. Well, like, you know, I wouldn't be of a hurling background. You wouldn't be of a hurling background, Brent, I don't think, in Newtown there wasn't a great amount of hurling, but...
I played for Burt now. Don't be writing me off. You told me years ago there, because I remember texting you after seeing a couple of hurling articles. You said, yeah, just have a chat to Loch Nahan. He keeps me right.
No, because I was just going to say that about Gerland. Like, I think Ger would... Jared's watching hurling over 50 years, and he says, bar the great Kilkenny team, you know, under Cody, with Jeff and Tommy Walsh, JJ Delaney, etc., that this is the best team he's ever seen. And, you know, like, if you look at the score Cork put up yesterday, like, that was a huge score. Yeah. You know, what was it, the end? 122, and that would have won a huge amount of All-Ireland finals in the past, but they were beaten out the gate, and they were beaten out the gate from early on, that they're just... you know, the first 5 minutes was ferocious and was hugely entertaining.
Mm.
But, like, Cork were desperately clinging onto the coattails even then. And they just pulled away so easily. Like, in every area of the field, they're just so superior. And, you know, everything from their conditioning to their skill level, you know, to their tactics, the incredible coaching they have, you know, particularly with Paul Kinnaird, because, you know, Paul Kinnaird's such a fascinating figure because he's made such a huge impact on Clare and Limerick. And he's actually a football man. He played football for Limerick. And I'd be very curious to see what he would do with a football team if he ever moved over to football. Like, I know we had the Limerick minor footballers this year, but if he ever took on the senior team, because he's, by all accounts, he's an exceptional coach. And, you know, he obviously knows football very well. It's his first love. So, like, they're going to be there. If you look at their age profile, they're all, virtually all, early to mid-20s. So they're going to be there for a long time. You know, and Cork would be seen as a coming team. They've had huge underage success, but they were blown out of the water. You know, you look at Galway, Joe Canning's gone. A couple of retirements in memory, and Tipperary, Liam Sheedy's gone. You know, Clare, Wexford, Waterford, it's hard to see them touching them. So yeah. Who's going to get near them in the next while? Kilkenny are going through transition too.
Yeah. So it's probably a case for them being at an excellent level, and everybody else has just probably gone through a bit of a change. Ken, I just wondered, yeah. There's big talk about their structures and how organised they are in Limerick and pulling it through from everything's coherent with underage. And me and you had a conversation before about the kind of the money. It was more in the football. If you look at the top teams at the time, literally the richest counties are the teams that are at the top, and you can almost evaluate them in their position in the country. Now, I know part of that it leads to the other in terms of right interest, and the county is going to generate more money. But just the McManus background in terms of Limerick there, has that given them a boost that's helped all this happen, Ciarán, or is that just a part of it?
Yeah, well, see, this didn't happen by accident. You know, this was, basically a master plan between the McManuses, Joe McKenna, who played for Limerick with the one that won the All Ireland in 1973. Like, Eamon Cregan was involved. Anthony Daly was in as a full-time head of the academy for a few years. And they put this academy in place. And, you know, a lot of counties have development squads and they wouldn't call them an academy. But this is more along the lines of, say, the Munster Rugby Academy or a professional soccer academy. Like, it's very professional with a lot of expertise, you know, people who are, know it's their job, they're not volunteers. So that's where the money makes an impact. Like, there's money can make it makes an impact at senior level too, but, you know, it only can have so much of an impact when players are working or they're students or whatever. You know, they have other things going on, they're not full-time officials, you know. But it does help, and, you know, the likes of Holidays, you know, the players have been out at Sandy Lane Resort in the Bahamas, and, you know, there's a lot of perks with it, but it's the money that's been pumped into the academy and getting the best coaches around in there and, you know, the hothouse players there and giving them really good coaching. So there's just they're reaping the benefits of that now. And you can't, you know, you can't underestimate the impact that makes. Yeah. You know, you really can't. And it's very hard for others to compete with that. Like, so many counties are struggling with fundraising. You know, particularly, you know, when you've been the last 18 months that we've had with COVID, you know, that at club level, you know, it's very hard to sell lotto tickets or anything, even, you know, when pubs weren't closed, like, or pubs weren't open, you know, so it's very hard to keep things going. So at county level, it's been even tougher. And Limerick are a couple of steps forward that way. Like Tipperary were as well. Tipperary had, you know, a high-powered finance company put in place, like with the head of the Tenio company. Niall Quinn was on the committee. You know, there's a load of people of influence and a lot of people with a fair amount of money behind them, and they raised a lot of funds. And I think that's the way it's gone, and it's become a bit of an arms race. But now anybody looking at Limerick trying to compete with that, it's a big challenge because there are not many JP McManuses around.
Unfortunately, Ciarán is right. Ciarán, just watching it back to Dublin debate, and I know it's all going to die now. Well, it's not going to die now, but in terms of if the pack have caught up to Dublin somewhat. But I was just thinking, it's probably more, I mean, in soccer terms, it's like London having just one team instead of having Arsenal, Chelsea, West Ham, Crystal Palace and that. You know, it wouldn't be able to service the city. But I'm just thinking, forgetting about kind of the size of Dublin, the GAA playing population, is that so much bigger in Dublin? Is that not more the issue around, you know, the next year underage, being able to make it into that squad or make it into that team? Is it not got to a stage where there's so many GAA players that there needs to be two teams?
Yeah, well, that's a fair point, because there's actually probably a stronger argument for having more teams at underage, because I think the championship would lose something if you have more than one Dublin team. Like, people are so, you know, their identity is so tied up. If you have a county team and that's what you're attached to, you're not attached to North Dublin or South Dublin or, you know, Fingal or Dunleary or whatever you want to call it, you know. So But at underage, like, if you want to make the Dublin minor team, like, you can imagine how many minors there are in Dublin. When you say, like, a club like Ballyboden, St Andrews or Nathena, you know, they're 50 or 60 underage teams.
Mm.
So it's so hard, and it must be very disheartening. You could be a very good player, young player in Dublin, and not get near the minor squad, like Brian Fenton.
Yeah.
But Brian Fenton didn't make the Dublin minors. You know, eventually made it through at under 21. But, like, some players, when that happens, you know, can get disheartened.
Yes.
So, you know, you want to keep as many players involved for as long as possible. So maybe given the carrot that there's a few, a couple more underage teams there would help. But the demographics is not just about Dublin. Like, everybody talks about Dublin's population. But there's a very interesting study, like a government report there from about 2 years ago. And it's where the population of Ireland will be in about 17, 18 years' time now. And these reports are generally very accurate. And they basically think Cork County will double in size. The Cork population will be close to 500,000. Limerick will explode in size as well, and Galway. So all the big urban centres. So it's not just Dublin that will have huge advantages in population. It's the other urban centres as well. And if you talk to the people, say, involved in Limerick hurling, they'll talk to you about the same issues that Dublin have. Like, in a lot of working-class areas in Dublin, the GAA has made very little impact. Like, in inner-city Dublin, between the two canals, 116,000 people live there. They've only got two players, the footballers, in 60 years, Paddy Cullen and Ger Brennan, from that area. So there's loads of untapped territory there. And the same in Limerick. The working-class areas in Limerick, like Moy Ross, you know, where the rugby player Keith Earls is from, a lot, and the inner-city areas, a lot of those... hurling hasn't made that much of an impact yet. So they have a lot to work on. They can actually get stronger because of that. So, you know, whereas I know, just talking to people at home, they'd be worried about what's going to happen after COVID. In terms of COVID, has kept a lot of players at club level at home. You know, that normally they might have gone away working, or they might have gone travelling for the summer. They put their plans on hold. And if COVID ends and there's not much work for them, which could be, you know, there's a fair likelihood that could happen. You could see a huge exodus on the Western Seaboard. A lot of players leaving, either going to the big urban centres or leaving the country. And it could be a lot of clubs and a lot of bother, I think.
Yeah, I suppose, Ian, it's a bit scary. And if you look at the better teams now, particularly if you're a young lad there and you make it in, you're in development squads, they tend to stay in it. Then it probably gives you a better opportunity to go to college and you know, get a bit of help with that, or accommodation or whatever. So there's a trajectory going right through there that all the better teams are. You're going to be involved in big games, which means, yes, you'll get up and hit the gym in the morning. So while these top teams, I mean, we look at obviously the top seven in particular, I think eight, they're just gradually pulling away from everybody else. But there's going to be loads of factors around that, Ian, you're right, in terms of as we get more urbanised, the power that the bigger sides have and how we deal with that. It's probably, I think it'll be by far the biggest thing the GAA will ever have to deal with.
Yeah, and there's no easy answer. That's the thing. Like, nobody can go on your show and say this is what we should do, because nobody knows. Like, if you have this situation... Like, you know, we didn't even mention the likes of Meath and Kildare. Like, their populations are growing massively too, and they're actually doing pretty decent work, you know, which will eventually pay off for them, I would say. You know, they will make progress. So if you are in counties, you know, like Monaghan is a miracle because of what they have to work with, that they've been Division 1 for so long.
Mm.
But how long is that sustainable, you know? I know Pat Gilroy went in the Sunday game last year, and he talked about, you know, down the line, we might have to look at franchises and amalgamating counties, you know, not just about splitting Dublin. And there was a huge outcry about that. But, you know, people will see, you know, you go back to the start of the championship and the hammering Leitrim and Sligo took. And, you know, there's so many teams that are just lambs to the slaughter year after year after year. And it's changed dramatically in the last 10 years. And, you know, before that, like, you had... You know, like you say, between the 90s and the noughties, you know, Leitrim, Sligo won Connacht titles, Westmeath and Laois won Leinster titles, Clare won a Munster title. Like, every county in Ulster contested the Ulster final, and nearly all of them won it. You know, I think seven of them won it. So, but now you've got to a situation where, you know, the last four with Tyrone, Kerry, Mayo and Dublin, and they've been the last four in nearly all the championships of the last 10 years. Like, Donegal and Monaghan have been in for a couple of them. But other than that, those have been your last four. The same counties year after year. And a bit of the problem is the league. because the league is a very enjoyable competition because it puts teams at the same level in against each other, and you get a lot of good games. But if you go back to when you were playing, Brendan, remember you played against London when the league was shaken up. Because
right.
I was at the game and you headed the goal and you went to trouble with water for disrespect to London. But what happened back then is they shook things up. The GA thought, you know, it's not good to have always, you know, Dublin against Kerry, against Mayo, against Galway, whatever. You know, that would shake it up and just pick teams at random.
Yeah.
So you had Donegal going over to London. Like Donegal, the year after they won the All-Ireland 92, they went down to Carlow, I remember. They had an away trip down to Carlow.
Yeah.
But what a lot of teams think, or a lot of football people think, that helped a lot of teams progress.
Yeah.
Because they were getting a chance
against
the better teams in league football.
There was
and
nothing.
They don't get that chance now.
But you know what, Ken, there was a tightening then. The gap wasn't there at that point. You know, I remember playing those games and playing the likes of Clare and Leitrim, and that there was always a kick in them. You know, I mean that header. I thought I was playing for Harps. I think at that time I was so over and back. I forgot where I was when Tony Boyle fisted that ball across. We'll put that one to bed. But all those teams, you know, you just hadn't got the gap that you have now. You'd think if they jumbled things up now, you could get what you see in the likes of the Leinster Championship and the likes what Donegal did to Down, even who are a Division 2 team this year.
Yeah.
It's as if it's already gone past that point, Kieran.
Yeah, but see, it definitely wouldn't happen straight away.
Yeah.
You would get hammers on one side against it. And you got hammers back then.
Mm.
You got hammers, but there will be teams, you know, the likes of Laois and Westmeath and Leitrim's and Sligo, that they think that helped them, you know, that they, because if you got a couple of years of that, you know, playing against the better teams, like, it's a difficult one. Like, I remember James Horne said to me a few years ago, you know, that this is a complete myth that every team does the same work. And you often hear this thrown out, you know, thrown out around the GPA or something, you know, they're defending all their players, like to say, you know, the guys, you know, in the lesser counties or whatever you want to call them, that they work quite just as hard as the Dublin Kerrys and Mayo. And James Horne said to me, that is not true at all. He said, you wouldn't believe the difference in the level. He said, the top counties still work hard, they train hard, they train smarter, their lifestyle is, you know, is far more professional than the teams trying to get to that level. And I think, you know, unless you've done that work, you don't realise the difference.
Mm.
Like I would say a lot of the Donegal players for Jim McGuinness thought, God, we train hard and we put in the work. And it's only when it's taken to a different level you suddenly realise, Jesus, we weren't at it at all.
Yeah.
You know, and you see that with Mayo, like people were saying, oh, Dublin were out of gas on, you know, geez, I wonder why Dublin weren't training as well as they should be. You know, I would flip that around. It just shows you the work Mayo did.
Yeah.
You know, Mayo worked incredibly hard. They were in incredible condition. It doesn't mean Dublin were Dawson all year. And that Dublin bunch had been around the block. Like, if their training was lacking, they would make it known to Desi Farrell and the selectors. I can't imagine them letting go a slack system.
Yeah.
You know, so it just shows you that you do need to be at a top level now.
Yeah, I think in many ways, Ken, you do the form of Leinster really kind of come back in Dublin in the second half. Now, not taking anything away from Mayo, I get the feeling with Dublin, maybe this was their first big game in the Championship, and maybe pre-match, and it mightn't be a Dublin thing normally, they were maybe giving it the whole lot in the dressing room, and they came out in the first half like Dublin of old, but once they got into a battle, you know, there seems to be no one like Mayo. Again, I think it's got the stage with Mayo now. They just keep coming back. You know, let's say they lose this All-Ireland final. Next year is just next year again. It doesn't seem to matter to them. They've got to that point, which might bode well for them going into this final, that there seems to be a bit of pressure off. I think it was bearing on them for those first few All-Irelands, but they've been in, what, 7 of the last 10 or 11. I think there's a lot of pressure maybe on them. I don't see that anymore. It's as if the Mayo people are just going to back them and support them regardless.
Well, see, you have to remember, like, we always talk of a team and kind of forget that there's so much changes in a team. Like, when Dublin were beaten, people were saying the greatest team ever were beaten. But the greatest team ever weren't beaten. The greatest team ever had Paul Flynn and Dermot Connolly and the Brogans and Rory O'Carroll and Keane O'Sullivan. You know, Stephen Cluxton. Like, all those fellas weren't there.
Yeah.
You know, so this is a different team. And the same with Mayo. This isn't the Mayo. There's no Killian O'Connor or Andy Moore or Keith Higgins. Tom Boyle's on the bench. Tom Parsons is gone. David Clark is gone. Won two or three All-Stars. So this is more or less, bar two or three, you know, bar Aidan O'Shea, who's now, you know, was taken off the last day, and a couple others. It's a very much a new Mayo team.
Yeah.
So they don't have the baggage. You know, to them, it's like, somebody say, oh, you've lost seven All-Irelands, you've lost 20 since 1950, or whatever the hell it is. Yeah. And they think, no, I played in one last year, that's it. You know, so it's new to them. No, and I remember Oisín McConville saying this years ago, often young players are a huge advantage because they haven't lost enough. Mm. You know, they haven't lost much. So they don't, like he says, doubts creep into you. You might know about this, Brendan, or you might agree with this, I don't know, but it's when you get a bit older that doubts creep in because you have the memory of things going wrong. Mm. When you're young, everything is fresh and new, and even if you have the odd loss, you think, ah, sure, I'm only started, there'll be loads of other days.
Mm.
So I think, you know, that was one of the advantages Mayo had, that these young fellas came on, and they had no fear, and they just went at it.
Yeah, and listen, they better watch, because some of them are playing that well. Loftus and Mullen in particular, if hopefully he comes back for the final. I hear the Aussie Rules boys are tapping them up, which that would be a real spanner in the works to Mayo after this season. I definitely hear a strong word about Mullen possibly going to Australia. That remains to be seen. But just on the Tyrone, our neighbours here in Tyrone, and obviously the COVID situation there in terms of forcing the GAA's hand to get the other week. How did you see that situation?
Well, it's a very messy situation because, you know, you have to look at how big the All-Ireland Football Final is. And because of what's happened in Tyrone, the date has been moved not once but twice. Now, that's a huge decision for the GAA to have to take, to move the All-Ireland Football Final. And, you know, people in Tyrone are rightly touchy about criticism of this, but people, you do have a curiosity out there in that this hasn't, you know, when so many county teams are in a bubble and that things are so tightly controlled, you know, that bar, you know, Sligo last year, you know, but other than that, in this year's championship, there'd be no other situation like this, like a huge outbreak. And people are wondering, how the hell did this happen? You know, especially when you had a few cases before the Ulster final, you thought, you know, there'll be a clampdown now and they'll get on top of it. But then it exploded after that. But, you know, you do have sympathy. Like, if you were in Tyrone's position, it's an awful position to be in. And even now, like, it's interesting, if you talk to medics who are involved in sport, and, you know, dealt with people who in different sports who've had COVID, and they say it's at least 5 weeks before you're anywhere near where you were.
Yeah.
I know the first couple of weeks back at training, you should do very little. So I think Tyrone could be wiped off the field. Like, I think it's very hard to see them being any way competitive. It would have been a very tough match for them anyway, but I think COVID will have knocked the stuffing out of them.
Yeah, it's so difficult, Ken. I mean, Tyrone had two things to do going into the championships here. One was beat Donegal, the other one was to win Ulster. The other three teams that are involved in the latter stages, their whole game was just All-Ireland. You know, nothing else really mattered. And I think that thing of maybe, you know, how things broke out, that you can't feel sorry for throwing around that, and it would be such a pity. But maybe a wee bit of a galvanising tool as well, Kieran, possibly, you know, you've got a back to the
wall. Tyrone have always loved that. Like, yeah. Tyrone have always used that. They always had nuts against them things. Yeah. Like, as far back as I can remember, you know, going back to when I was a kid, Tyrone always had that, you know, that we're kind of on our own, everybody's out to get us. So I think they'll try and feed off that, but you know, there's an edge to Kerry this year, and there's an anger to them, and that's rooted in messing up against Cork last year. But you look at, like, I actually think Dublin got the handiest All-Ireland they've ever got last year.
Mm.
You know, that's why, you know, people say, oh, they slipped this year. They might well have slipped a lot last year, but they weren't challenged. You know, they were able to cruise through an All-Ireland because it was such a strange season.
Yeah.
I know, and the big teams, so all the big teams going out early, you said, you know, you Mayo, very raw Mayo team got into the final. So, you know, Kerry would have seen that as an All-Ireland that got away, and they're determined not to let that happen again. And they'll have seen Dublin. They're obsessed with Dublin.
Yes.
They've been obsessed with Dublin for the last 10 years, trying to find a way to beat them. They don't have to find a way to beat them now. Their only All-Ireland since 2009 was against us in 2014, and we beat Dublin for them. Now Mayo have beaten Dublin for them. So it's falling into place with Kerry again.
Yeah. In many ways, that might disrupt them. I think, yeah, you're right, Kieran. They were gunning for Dublin, is right. Listen, Kieran, as ever, great points there. And thanks so much for joining us this evening on the DL Debate. And I'll speak to you soon.
No problem, Ben. Thanks.
Thanks, Kieran. That was Kieran Cunningham there. Always great to chat to Kieran, mighty man, chief sports writer with the Star, of course. Listen, folks, that's a wrap again for another DL Debate. I want to thank Kieran Cunningham there for his input. Ryan Ferry of the Donegal News and Donegal Ladies Football boss, Maxie Kern. I'll speak to you all next week.
The DL Debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's Letterkenny. Serving food you'll love with outdoor dining. Book now and enjoy the Sarah's experience.